The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
It was about marrying two sisters.
No, actually, I'm changing it up.
What's the subject?
The emergence of a Amalek.
Okay. So, Torahway, Northwest London, Tuesday, the 15th of Kislev, 1st of December, Rabbi Emanuel Shochet, Rabbi Yitzchok Shochet, right, that's why we got no posters, Rabbi Yitzchok Shochet on the subject of the emergence of Amalek.
We're all called that blood, so that was my father, my little brother. So this is a slight change up from the originally advertised topic, because I was put on the spot at 11 o'clock at night, and I wasn't thinking, and that was a matter that I was being Isaac in. But this is something that's more apropos, I think, than Yonah Diyama. The emergence of Amalek. First of all, there's a pasuk. The pasuk tells us, Timna haisa pilegesh li Esav. Timna was Esav's pilegesh, but Tela lalifas is Amalek. The pasuk continues and tells us that's when Amalek was first born. Now, who was Timna? So, for one thing, we know that the pasuk says, Aluf Leiton. Leiton was some chieftain, a head of a particular tribe, some element of royalty. And it says, Achis Leiton Timna. Leiton's sister was Timna. Asherolkein, in other words, Timna herself was somebody of significance, somebody of some kind of royalty. The question to be considered in the first instance is, Lamai Nakamina. Why does the Pasuk feel the need to tell us that Timna was the Pelegish to Aliphaz, the son of Esav, and then she gave birth to Amalek, other than maybe perhaps to share with us where Amalek first came from? But it really still begs clarity. Why is it necessary? What is the underlying significance of the Pasuk? And the truth is, it's not my question. The first one who asks this question was Menashe, Melech Menashe. Menashe himself, the king, Zokti Gemara. The Gemara says in Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Tzadik Tes, Toner Rabbanan, there's a pasuk that says that there are certain insolent souls, individuals who have incredible chutzpah. And who is that individual that has? Who's that nefesh that is biyad rama, that insolent soul? Says the Gemara, is Menashe ben Chizkiya. That was Menashe ben Chizkiya, shahaya yeshe v'derish v'hagodin shal daifi. He used to sit and he used to look to mock what he considered to be useless psukim. What were those two useless psukim that he made reference to? Omar, he said, Moshe had nothing better to write in the Torah than the words Va'achas Leiton Timna, that the sister of Leiton was Timna. And also Timna haisa pilegesh le'esav, that Timna was a pilegesh to Esav. And also Vayelech Rubim Mekitziachitim Yimso Dodoim Basoda, that Rubim went out, as per the Parsha, when he went out in the Mekitziachitim, the harvesting of the wheat, and found these mandarins to bring to his mother. In other words, Menashe was sitting and mocking what he considers to be irrelevant psukim in the Torah, and he asks, Moshe had nothing better to write. And amongst what he considered to be those irrelevant psukim, where, for example, the idea of Timna being the Pelegesh of Esav, and another example of Reuben going out to make Tziachitim in the middle of the wheat harvest. I mean, yeah, the Mandarin aspect of the story is relevant as per the exchange between Rachel and Leah, but why does it have to tell us to make Tziachitim? Who cares when it was? So what we have over here is an example of Menashe himself asking the question of the relevance of the pasuk. And the truth is, it's a fair question. I mean, the Gemara uses him as an example of somebody who is just sitting and mocking what he considered to be irrelevant psukim. But the question remains, indeed, what is the significance of bringing in the pasuk? So the Gemara continues and says, Enachanami adirabba, the asan Allah mihas akasas timna mahi. We're asked, adirabba, why is it indeed the case that the Torah brings in this pasuk? What is the relevance to this pasuk? The Gemara continues and tells us, Timna bas malachim avoy, that Timna herself was, like we just said at the outset, the daughter of royalty, the Siv Alef Leitan Alef Timda, that she was part of a royal family. She wanted to be Megayer. She wanted to embrace monotheism, or whatever gear was in those days. So she came to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and they did not accept her. So she instead, as an alternative, decided to be a Pilegesh to Aliphas, the son of Esav, because Amra, she said, it's better for me to be a shifcha, a maidservant, within this family than to be royalty in that other family. Nasak mina Amalek, and ultimately Amalek came out from her. It's Arina Yisrael who caused a lot of anguish to call Yisrael. Why? My time asks the Gemara, why did Amalek come out from her? The Gemara says over there is Loibai Lahul Rachka, because they really shouldn't have pushed her away. Which is something that we're not going to get into in any great detail right now, although the Maharal, for example, says one of the reasons why they pushed her away is because as she comes from royalty, a basic qualification that was constant in that time amongst Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov was that there was a basic bittul, there was a basic self-abnegation towards the Ribbono Shel Olam. And because she comes from royalty, she'll never have that sense of bittul. She'll never have that sense of self-nullification, if you will. And therefore, it wouldn't be a genuine gear, wouldn't be a genuine conversion. Of course, that raises a different question regarding Hagar, and she also came from Malchus, but we're not going to get into all that right now. The bottom line is that the Gemara is telling us clearly is that she joined in the first instance. She wanted to join Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They resisted, and therefore she married the son of Esau. She married Elisa, so that at least in some way she could be connected to Klal Yisrael, to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And with regard to Mekitzei Chitin, like Rashi himself brings in the Pasuk over there, that Lagash Lelokach Menagazel, the reason why that Pasuk is brought in, to tell us that it was Dafka, the Mekitzei Chitin, it was in the wheat harvest, is because since it's the wheat harvest, it would have been a lot easier to Dafka go ahead and take wheat. So what the Pasuk is coming to tell us that Reuven didn't take from the wheat, it wasn't his, and the others were, of course, Makbid, as anyone would be, and Gezel, so he took from wild mandarin rather than from the actual wheat, which would have been Gezel. So that's the background. That's the basis for the Pasuk. There's the Pasuk that tells us how Amalek came into being as a result of Timnah, who was the Pelegesh of Elipaz, who was the son of Esav. The relevance of that Pasuk and how that all came to happen in the first instance is per what the Gemara tells us, because she sought to be Megayer, she was pushed away, she joined the family in some other way, but they shouldn't have pushed her away, says the Gemara, Asher Alkein, Amalek came from her. The question that we need to consider at this point is that why did Menashe, if he's looking to, the Gemara says, an insolent neshama, an insolent individual, he's looking to mock the Torah. He's looking to pick up on psukim that he considers to be irrelevant. There are any number of other psukim all throughout the Torah that at first glance seem to be problematic, without Medrash, without Rashi, without Gemara, v'chulu. Why is it that Menashe is picking up specifically on these psukim? You may tell me very simply, okay, so he wasn't exactly a great Talmud Chacham. He only got as far as this point over here, the earlier Parshas of Bereishis. That's where he picked up Dafka on these Pesukim. But the Gemara says, right later on in Sanhedrin, Dafka Gimel, very clearly, Menashe haya shayinda chamisha v'chamishin ponam eteros kahanim. Menashe would spend 55 different layers of Teros Kahanim, of Sefer Vayikra. He went layer after layer, keneged to corresponding to Shnei Malchusei. He was reigning for 55 years. And corresponding to that, he spent 55 times going through Taharas Kahanim, each time a deeper level and a deeper layer and a deeper understanding. And we will appreciate that Taharas Kahanim in itself is quite complex in itself, with all the different halakhas as they appertain to Kahanim and Karbonas and so on. So someone like that, who's able to go and unveil 55 different layers of Taharas Kahanim, is clearly somebody who's not an Amaret by any stretch. So on that basis, therefore, it begs the question again, why is the Dafka picking on these specific psukim? That's number one. Number two, and a far bigger question, is on the Gemara itself. The Gemara asks the question, on whom is the pasuk referring to? When it says, "Va'nefesh ha-shatase b'yad Rama," who is this insolent individual? That's Menashe ben Chizkiyo. Why? Because he went and he sat and he darshaned on what he deems to be useless, irrelevant psukim. That's our problem with Menashe. That's why he's considered an insolent individual. I mean, Och and Veh, if you want to consider the real problems with Menashe, look in the pasuk in Divrei Hayom and Perek Lamed Gimel by Yetzer Menashe Yehuda v'Yesh v'Yerushalayim. He led all of Shevet Yehuda and all of Yesh v'Yerushalayim completely astray into Avodah Zarah. Look at the pasuk in Malachim Beis in Perek Kof Aleph. It says, "The Gam Dam Noki Shofach Menashe Harbim Yoid." He literally spilled so much blood from one end of Yerushalayim to the other end of Yerushalayim. In fact, the Gemara says, who was it that he killed amongst everybody else? He killed Yeshaya HaNavi. Menashe himself went ahead and was responsible. The Gemara, in fact, enumerates so many different things that Menashe did wrong. Shaharag Yeshaya, he went ahead and he killed Yeshaya HaNavi. The Gemara says, Osa Tselem Masoy Elef Bnei Odom, he made a Tselem the size of it, the weight that required 1,000 people to carry, and the 1,000 people died each and every single day. He was killing off another 1,000 people. Another thing the Gemara says is Osa Avodah Zarah. He went ahead and he made another Avodah Zarah. Haras Et HaMizbeach. He went and he broke the Mizbeach. Zarah Bet HaTorah. He went and he burnt a Sefer Torah. Baal Achayseh Alimai. He abused his sister, etc., etc. And as he said to his mother, Klum Ani Oiseh Elo Lahakas Esbari. I'm doing all of this just to anger Esbari, my creator, the Rebbeinu Shalom. So, and in fact, just take this a step further. There's a Gemara in Yevamos and Daf Mem Tes. Shimon ben Azai actually says, Motsosi Megillas Yuxim Yerushalayim, Abichosaba Menashe Harakas Yeshaya. He said, I found an actual chronicle that says very categorically that Menashe killed Yeshaya. And the Gemara says over there, not only he didn't just stop killing, he went and he justified the killing. He sat him down and he put him through some kind of din Torah, some kind of legal process. He goes through an example. He says, "Maisham, our Moshe Rabbeinu said, 'Ki lo yirani ha'adam b'chayt.' Moshe Rabbeinu records in the Torah that the Rebbeinu Shalom says, no person will be able to ever see me and live." And then says Menashe to Yeshaya, "Va'atzo Marta, you said, 'Va'eret Hashem Yeshu al kisir aminisa,' that you saw the Eibush there. You saw the Rebbeinu Shalom kiddi al kisir aminisa. So if you saw the Rebbeinu Shalom, Moshe Rabbeinu says, 'Ki lo yirani ha'adam b'chayt,' then I have to put you to death." And a number of different sukkim, another number of different other references he makes in regards to Yeshaya's experience, which he then justifies, warrants his actual killing. In other words, he's justifying himself for killing him. So on that basis, we have to consider the bigger question. Why is it when the Gemara says, "Hanefesh shetasa biyad Rama," the Pasuk says that there's this insolent nefesh, that's Menashe ben Chizkiya. Why? Because he Yeshiv Bederish Bagodesh Aldoifi, because he would mock what he considers to be irrelevant sukkim. That's not our issue with Menashe. Our issue with Menashe is far, far bigger, and the things that he committed so terribly wrong were far more severe. So what's pshat? I'm going to suggest to you the following. First of all, by way of little anecdote, I once heard from a Chassidish Mashpia. The question was asked of him, straight up, why is it the case? You know, in Chabad, they're doing mitzvahim. They're out on the street. Do you want to put on tefillin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So when you'll have somebody who comes over to you and smiles politely and says thank you, but no thank you, and so on and so forth, you know in all likelihood that they're not Jewish. They're probably Episcopalian or something like that. But when somebody resists and somebody gets angry and somebody says no or ignores you, or in fact, as soon as you make eye contact with them, they go and they cross the other side, they walk away from you, you know, there's like a friend, a chaver of mine in Manchester, was once standing outside on a cold winter day with his talus and tefillin, looking to be making a minion. He was looking for that 10th man, and people are walking by and looking at him, smiling, casting him a curious glance, and one guy stops and says to him, what's the matter with you? Aren't you embarrassed standing out in the street like this? Aren't you ashamed of yourself? He goes, oh, you're the one I'm looking for. Come inside. I need my 10th man. The point is, something that speaks to you, or that speaks to your neshama, no matter how many layers are masking over, is always going to trigger you. And then you have one of two ways to react or to respond. You either embrace, or you go to the opposite extreme. You passionately reject. What you don't do, what you can't really do, is remain actually indifferent. Now, with that in mind, let's consider what ultimately happened with Timna. So there's a fascinating medrash that tells us Esav Ishbiat Eliphaz B'nei Ladegat Yaakov. Esav called over Eliphaz, and we know this from Rashi and Chumash, that Eliphaz, he told Eliphaz, I want you to go and kill Yaakov. Lefishi, I'm in a prayer because he took the prayer from him, etc. But Amalai says to him, Esav says to Eliphaz, B'ni B'chari, my firstborn son, Im Tahargeu Toshu L'cha B'chari. If you kill him, then the whole B'chari, the whole firstborn rights, etc., will come back to you. Halach Nisyaye Tim Timna. So he went to take advice from Timna. That says he went to take advice from his wife, and she actually said to him, she said to Yaakov, Yaakov is stronger than you and will kill you. And your father, the Rasha, If he wasn't really afraid that Yaakov will kill him, if your father wasn't really afraid, then he'd go and kill him himself rather than send somebody else. The fact that he's sending you is because he's scared. So you need to know that Yaakov is stronger than you. If you're going to go and try and kill Yaakov, then he's going to end up killing you. And then we know, what did Eliphaz do? He went, he took all of his possessions from him, and an Ani Asashim commands like this, he was Mekayim, on the one hand, Kibadav, but at the same time, without actually killing Yaakov. And that's why Yaakov came to Laban, empty-handed, etc. But then the Medrash, so that much we always know from Rashi. But then the Medrash continues. Says, Kibin Shira, Esef Shul Yotza, Eliphaz Mitzvotza, since Eliphaz sees, Esav saw that Eliphaz didn't do what he asked, Halach la Molech ben Eliphaz. He went to a Molech ben Eliphaz, his grandson. V'amoloi shiarda giz Yaakov. He said to him, go and kill Yaakov. Nesatza Molech l'divrei zekneinu Esav saw. Molech taka wanted to do his grandfather Esav's request. V'nishpa lo shiarganu, and he swore to him that he'll go and kill him. K'sheshama Timna hadavar haram, and Timna heard this, hisira by kamash yotza lo Eliphaz. She warns him, just like she had warned Eliphaz, like Kibbol Varel, but he didn't accept what she had to say. Ongolai, so then she said to him, to play on his emotions, Chayiv Godol Mutzal Azara Shel Avraham.
Kol Halashon.
There is a kind of decree, as it were, that's hovering over the offspring of Avraham. Nichsiv Abazim Ve'inu Aysam. She says, there's a problem. You should know that if you're going to go ahead and kill Yaakov, there's Gzeiro from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's hovering over the household of Avraham. Somewhere they're going to be enslaved and they're going to suffer for a long period of time. If you will kill Yaakov, then that's it. You're killing off the bloodline from Avraham going that way, which means it's going to go in a different direction. It's going to end up befalling you and the Zarei Shel Esav instead. Because you're also offspring of Avraham. That's why a Molech waited until after the Shibud in Mitzrayim. So that part of the Gvera, the debt, as it were, that is hovering, will have been fulfilled. They'll leave Mitzrayim. And then he will go and attack them. In case you want to know why a Molech attacked Klal Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim, it's because of the fact that he had made an oath to his mother, to his grandfather, to Esav, that he was going to exact revenge. That's the meaning of what it says, Vayavay Amalek. Why does it say Vayavay Amalek? Not Amalek, it could just say Vayachalam Amalek. Oh, Vayalachim Amalek, as the passage continues. Why is it Vayavay Amalek? Where is he coming from? He was coming from that original Shavua, that original place of hatred that he had sworn to his grandfather. But then there is another aspect. There's Rav Avram Saba in the Sra Hamar. Rav Avram Saba actually adds a further dimension over here. He says, Sibat Sinat Amalek, Omru B'medesh, Shehibet Sibat Sibat Timna Ahis Leiter. The basis for Amalek's hatred, says the Medrash, is because of the demand of Timna, not Esau, of Timna Ahis Leiter. But Tehlud Loyas Amalek, Besipur Loyas Kol Hamar Arayis, that Timna herself relayed over to Amalek everything that had transpired with her, all that resistance, going back to the original point, when she wanted to be Megayer, and she was resisted by Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. She conveyed and communicated all that over to Amalek. And she commanded him, I need you to carry in your heart and harbor that hatred forever. In other words, she's angry. She's filled with rage about what happened, and she's communicating that rage over to Amalek, asking him to harbor that hatred. And again, that's pshat by Yavoy Amalek. What does it mean? He's coming from that place of hatred that he was holding on to for so long, and indeed, again, waiting till after Shibud Mitzrayim, etc., etc. The problem over here is there's a bit of a paradox, a bit contradictory, because mitzad echad, the Medrash seems to suggest that she actually loved Yaakov. She was looking to protect Yaakov. So she first tells Eliphaz, walk away. And then afterwards, when Amalek comes forward, she tells him to walk away as well. She tries to discourage him from coming forward. And the suggestion is that he came ultimately of his own accord. Yet elsewhere, the clear mashmois is that no, she herself is harboring hatred, and she conveyed that hatred over into the heart into the heart of Amalek. So which one is it? It's a puzzling paradox. Was there love for Yaakov, or was there hatred for Yaakov? And the truth is that sometimes they are inextricably connected. You know, there's such a thing called the fox syndrome. The fox syndrome is like when the fox is walking by and he sees these grapes hanging, overhanging from a tree, and he tries to jump up, tries to get the grapes, and he can't get the grapes as much as he's trying. He keeps trying, can't get them. So instead of continuing to try, he gives up. But he doesn't just give up. He walks away and goes, ah, those grapes are probably no good. They're probably going to make me sick. They're probably sour. He gets angry, as it were, at the grapes. He finds all the different reasons and all the excuses. So in other words, when you really want something and you can't have it, you don't become indifferent and say, okay, maybe whatever, walk away. Okay. Then the only way you can cope with it, or the only way you can live with yourself by not being able to have that which you love, is to turn yourself against it, to turn that love into actual hate. And the truth is that sometimes they can exist simultaneously. That's the point. The person sees the tefillin, his neshama is drawn to it, he knows ultimately this is the right thing that I should be doing, but he's fighting against it. So instead of just being apathetic, often enough, he rages against it. And you find somebody sometimes who may at some point in their life love Yiddishkeit for whatever the reason, and then for whatever the reason, they walk away from it. They never just walk away from it. They ultimately end up raging against it. Where mitzadeh, that's how they live with themselves, because mitzadecha, deep down, they know this is teres emes. Mosh emes is teres emes. Leidoch, he said, for whatever the reason, then they don't want to be a part of it right now. But the only way they can cope with not being a part of it is by pushing hard against it, by resisting it, by raging against it. So that's why Timna mitzad echad has the Abba, she has the love to Yaakov, etc., but she can't have it. She's being pushed away. They're resisting. And therefore, the only way she can deal with it is by harboring this anger in her heart, and that's how she's able to better actually live with herself. Now let's consider the life of Menashe. The Gemara in Sanhedrin also tells us, who was Chizkiyo? That is Menashe's father. Chizkiyo was somebody with Noras Cherev al Pesa Beis HaMedrash. He was hanging a sword by the entrance to the Beis HaMedrash. Omar kol mi she'eina oisik b'terdo, whoever doesn't come along and learn Yudoka b'cherev zu. He was somebody who was so emphatic about every aspect of Limud HaTorah. So much so that the Gemara itself asks the question, Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda, so he taught everybody else Torah at that point in time. And to Menashe, he couldn't, his own son, he couldn't teach Torah. And the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, no matter how much he harbored, no matter how much he labored with him, etc., etc., Menashe was resistant. He was that problem child, if you will. It just didn't work. Not only that, but we know from the Gemara in Brachas, the Gemara Brachas Daf Yud, where it talks about the whole story of how Chizkiyo didn't get married in the first instance. But he also prepared a Virivya, and he was going to die. Yeshaya Novi comes over and challenges him, and he explains, because he knew already, Alpi Nevuah, that he was going to have this child, Menashe. And then Yeshaya challenges him, etc. And he goes on, gets married, and obviously has this child. So Menashe is being rejected even before he's brought into the world. He's the unwanted child. And even afterwards, when he's born, he comes into the world, and his father is the big man who's actually encouraging all Torah and is teaching Torah to all of Klal Yisrael, but he can't impact his own son. He can't make a difference. He has a problematic son. So what happens in the end? Yes, Enochanami. Menashe did so many other evil things in so many different ways. But the problem with Menashe is that when he comes to this pasuk about Timna, Hilegesh Eliphaz, he suddenly sees a very clear mirror image of his own life experience. This is Timna whom mitzad echad wants to be a part of something, but then turns that love into anger and into rage when she can't be a part of it. She loves Yaakov on the one hand, she can't deny the truth of what it is, that's why she wants to be a part of it, but against that, ultimately, when she can't, she transfers over that hatred to Amalek, which gets taken out later on. So Menashe is identifying in Timna a reflection of his very own struggle. Because that pasuk, more than anything, exposes an inner craving. and he can't handle the rejection. And that's basically the ultimate source of the evil that's going on inside of him. In fact, what happens? He looks into the Beis HaMedrash and he sees these young, beautiful children who are sitting and learning, and they're Isaac, and they know all the halachos of Tumah, Tahara, and so on and so forth. And he's thinking to himself, that could have been me. That's actually the reason why the other pasuk is brought in as well. That Yehuda, that Reuven is going to make it siachitim. Gemara says again, why? Because he didn't take Minah Gezel. Metaphorically speaking, Gezel is not just stealing literally something, but also trying to steal an identity that isn't yours, living a life that isn't meant for you. In other words, Menashe could have accepted the fact he's a resistant child. Okay, so you know what? The Beis Medrash isn't for you. All that in-depth learning that everybody else is caught up in is not your way. So you can choose a different path. There are so many different other ways in which you can still be a mensch, in which you can still be a productive human being, and an erlich yid, etc., etc. But he's angry and raging against a life that wasn't meant for him, and he sees all these children sitting there in the Beis HaMedrash, and he's thinking to himself, that could have been me. He's yearning for an identity that wasn't meant for him. Find your mission and live with your mission and run with your mission in some other way. But no, he's raging against this. He wants to steal, as it were, a life that wasn't ultimately meant for him. So if you want to know where all the other things came from with regards to Menashe, all the other terrible things that he will have done, that's the answer. It actually comes from that very place of where Timna comes from. His very love for Yiddishkeit, or his identification with the essence and truth of Yiddishkeit, Mitzad Echad, that's who his father was, that's how he was raised. Well, because he can't connect with it, he decides to rage against it. And when he decides to rage against it, he does all those other terrible things as well. That's shot in the Gemara when it says, who is this insolent nefesh? That's Menashe. Why? Because of that pasuk. He identifies himself in that pasuk. The pasuk in regards to Timna, and later on also the pasuk in regards to Reuven as well. But the takeaway from this is what happened in the end. What happened in the end to Amalek? And what happened in the end to Menashe? In regards to Amalek, the Gemara tells us in Gittin b'bnei Bonav shel Haman ha'yolam nintar b'bnei Brak. Ultimately, there were offspring later on who found their way back, and they were learning, okay, it's Machlek is about Pshat and the Gemara, but ultimately they found their way back. And with regards to Menashe, there's a Yerushalmi in Sanhedrin that actually says that Menashe, as we know at the end, he was praying to every other Avodah Zarah, it didn't work, then he was praying to the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Says the Yerushalmi, "V'ayu malachi asharis mistamina fecholainish loitalis bilosis Menashe l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu." The malachi asharis decided he doesn't deserve tshuva, that they wanted to close up all the different windows, v'choli v'choli, to block him, his tefillah, to being able to go up. By Malachi Asharis and Mufleya Kodesh Baruch Hu, they said, "Rebbeinu Shalom, Adam Shavir Avodah Zarah v'hem Metzelam v'Hechat Makabel b'Tshuva." Somebody who did such terrible things, you're going to be Makabel as Tshuva. Amalehem, the Rebbeinu Shalom says to them, "Im Eini Makabel b'Tshuva Harei Ani Noyelas Adelas Ofnei Kol Bal Tshuva." If I'm not going to accept his Tshuva, no matter how severe his averus were, that I'm closing the door for every potential individual to be able to come back. Ma'asulai Kodesh Baruch Hu Adidei Bishter, do what the Rebbeinu Shalom do, Chotulai Chatzira Mitachas Kisei HaKovet Shalai, Kaviyokli made a dug a tunnel underneath the Kisei HaKovet, Shomatz Kinosei, and that's where the Trillis of Menashe came ultimately through. In other words, even the person who, for whatever the reason, is raging, when you see them raging against Yiddishkeit, you should know that ultimately there's a reason for that. And that beneath the rage, there is still the love that is ultimately there. And sometimes, yes, like a Kodesh Baruch Hu Kaviyachol, you have to dig a tunnel to be able to penetrate all the way deep into the actual neshama, and sof kol sof, in the end, you'll be able to reach to the Nekuda Yados, to the Pintel Yid that is in that person as well, and ultimately be able to bring them back, to channel that hatred and that rage back to an Ava, back to a true love for Yiddishkeit once more. I'm just going to finish on a quick point over here, already been again to Hanukkah, on the same point, but in a broader scheme of things. Very quickly, there's a famous B'nai Yisachar that tells us that as much as we have Rosh Hashanah, and we have Yom Kippur, and we have Hashanah Rabbah, the B'nai Yisachar points out and says, the Zayis Yechaper Aaron, that we actually have another extended period all the way until Zayis Hanukkah, based on the pasuk of the Zayis Yechaper Aaron. With that in mind, a fascinating little insight from the Bas Ayin, who was the Talmud of the Maggid of Mizrich, on a pasuk next week, by Yehi Kimishleish Chadashim, by Yugad Yehuda Lemar, Zangfa Tamar Kalasecha. It was after 3 months of the whole story of Yehuda and Tamar, and Yehuda was told as Zonta Tamar Kalasecha. And what happens? And he says, "Fatio b'sisora, take her out, have her burned." And then she says, "Have a look to see l'mi eila, to whom these things belong." Apsil b'chesemet b'amate. And then he says, "Sotkim emeni, she's reiki alkeila nesatia l'sheila b'ni, because I didn't give her over to Sheila my son." Yehuda is generally a euphemism for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yudke Bokke, Shem Havayah is contained therein. Tamar is a euphemism for Klal Yisrael. Domsel, Goyla v'sura, Domsel v'samar. Now look at the pasuk. By Yehi Kimish Leish Chadoshim, it's after approximately 3 months. Approximately 3 months after Hashanah Rabbah is Zayis Hanukkah. By Yuga the Yehuda Leimor, comes the Eitz Ahara in front of the Rabbeinu Shalem and says, Zomsa Tamar Kalosecha. Look at Klal Yisrael. Look at Tamar Kalosecha, your bride, Klal Yisrael. Zomsa, they're still being unfaithful. They're still behaving that the way that they're behaving. There's still so many of them that seem to be raging against Yiddishkeit. But Yemi Yehuda, Yehuda says, "Abazai haitziu abitzisorev, manachanami," and she has to suffer the consequences. But then Tamar turns around and it says, "Lamia she'ela, look to whom these belong to. Hachesemes, that's the seal on the bottle of oil that was there in the base of Mikdash. Even in the darkness, even as every other bottle was defiled, they still went and they still dug and persevered, insisting and looking and searching and finding that one bottle of oil, the one that still has the chesemes." The psil of the wicks that we still continue to light here in the Golos, in our menorah. And the manah, mata is the shtolz, the strength, that we're still steadfast. And we're still actively looking and seeking for those who may be raging to dig the tunnels deep into their neshamas as well, to light them up as well. And we're demonstrating this by Yom Yehuda Tzotkom Imeni. Yehuda says, "You know what? She's right. I can't hold it against her. Because I didn't give her over to Sheila, Shila Zumashiach. Because I'm leaving them languishing in Golos. And nevertheless, even as they're languishing in Golos, they're still going ahead with the Chesemes and the Psil and the Mata. It's on me. It's not on them." And we should talk about Zoicha, that we'll continue digging those tunnels. We'll continue lighting up those Nekuda Hayados that exist within all those various neshamas, and the Rabbeinu Shalom Shetaki and the Tatiya L'Sheila B'ni bring us about to the Gula Mitzvah Shalom Ha'omei.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the Rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.